gather over her front. The torn edges would not meet. William's throat went dry. Her sudden vulnerability was thrilling. It was much more exciting than when he had watched her washing, for now she knew he was looking, and she felt ashamed, and her shame inflamed him all the more. She covered her breasts with one arm and her triangle with the other hand. William dropped the strip of linen and grabbed her by the hair. He jerked her toward him, spun her around, and ripped the rest of the tunic from her back. She had delicate white shoulders, a small waist, and surprisingly full hips. He pulled her to him, pressing himself against her back, grinding his hips against her buttocks. He bent his head and bit her soft neck hard, until he tasted blood and she screamed again. He saw Richard move. "Hold the boy," he said to Walter. Walter grabbed Richard and put him in an arm lock. Holding Aliena hard against him with one arm, William explored her body with the other hand. He felt her breasts, weighing and then squeezing them, and he pinched her small nipples. Then he ran his hand over her stomach and into her triangle of hair between her legs, bushy and curly like the hair on her head. He prodded her roughly with his fingers. She began to cry. His prick was so stiff he felt it would burst. He stepped away from her and jerked her backward over his outstretched leg. She fell on her back with a crash. The fall winded her and she gasped for breath. William had not planned this, and he was not quite sure how it had happened, but nothing in the world could stop him now. He lifted his tunic and showed her his prick. She looked horrified. She had probably never seen a stiff one. She was a real virgin. All the better. "Bring the boy here," William said to Walter. "I want him to see it all." For some reason, the thought of doing it in front of Richard's eyes was intensely piquant. Walter pushed Richard forward and forced him to his knees. William knelt on the floor and prized Aliena's legs apart. She began to struggle. He fell on top of her, trying to crush her into submission, but still she resisted and he could not get inside her. He was irritated. This was spoiling everything. He raised himself on one elbow and hit her across the face with his fist. She cried out, and her cheek turned an angry red. But as soon as he tried to enter her, she began to resist him again. Walter could have held her still, but he had the boy. Suddenly William was inspired. "Cut the boy's ear off, Walter," he said. Aliena went still.
"No," she said hoarsely. "Leave him alone. Don't hurt him any more."
"Open your legs, then," William said. She stared at him, wide-eyed with horror at the dreadful choice forced upon her. William enjoyed her anguish. Walter, playing the game perfectly, drew his knife and put it to Richard's right ear. He hesitated, then with a movement that was almost tender, he sliced off the boy's earlobe. Richard screamed, blood spurted from the small wound. The piece of flesh fell on Aliena's heaving chest.
"Stop!" she screamed. "All right, I'll do it."
She opened her legs. William spat on his hand, then rubbed the moisture between her legs. He pushed his fingers inside her. She cried out with pain. That excited him more. He lowered himself on top of her. She lay still, tense. Her eyes were closed. Her body was slick with sweat from the struggle, but she shivered. William adjusted his position, then hesitated, enjoying the anticipation and her dread. He looked at the others. Richard was looking on with horror. Walter was watching greedily. William said, "Your turn next, Walter." Aliena groaned in despair. Suddenly he shoved inside her roughly, pushing as hard and far as he could. He felt the resistance of her maidenhead, a real virgin, and he shoved again brutally. It hurt him, but it hurt her more. She screamed. He shoved once more, harder still, and he felt it break. Aliena's face turned white, her head slumped to one side, and she fell into a faint. Then at last William spurted his seed inside her, laughing and laughing with triumph and pleasure until he was drained dry. The storm raged for most of the night, then toward dawn it stopped. The sudden quiet woke Tom Builder. As he lay in the dark, listening to the heavy breathing of Alfred beside him and the quieter sound of Martha on his other side, he calculated that it might be a clear morning, which would mean he could see the sunrise for the first time in 2 or 3 cloudy weeks. He had been waiting for this. He got up and opened the door. It was still dark. There was plenty of time. He prodded his son with a foot. "Alfred, wake up. There's going to be a sunrise." Alfred groaned and sat upright. Martha turned over without waking. Tom went to the table and took the lid off a pottery crock. He removed a half-eaten loaf and cut off 2 thick slices, one for himself and one for Alfred. They sat down on the bench and ate breakfast. There was ale in the jug. Tom took a long swallow and passed it to Alfred. Agnes would have made them use cups, and so would Ellen, but there was no woman in the house now. When Alfred had drunk his fill from the jug, they left the house. The sky was turning from black to grey as they crossed the Priory Close. Tom had intended to go to the Prior's house and wake Philip. However, Philip's thoughts had followed the same lines as Tom's, and he was already there in the ruins of the cathedral, wearing a heavy cloak, kneeling on the wet ground, saying prayers. Their task was to establish an accurate east-west line, which would form the axis around which the new cathedral would be built. Tom had prepared everything some time ago. In the ground at the east end, he had planted an iron spike with a small loop in its top, like the eye of a needle. The spike was almost as tall as Tom, so that its eye was at the level of Tom's eyes. He had fixed it in place with a mixture of rubble and mortar, so that it could not be shifted accidentally. This morning he would plant another such spike, dead west of the first one, at the opposite end of the site. "Mix up some mortar, Alfred," he said. Alfred went to fetch sand and lime. Tom went to his tool shed near the cloisters and got a small mallet and the second spike. Then he went to the west end of the site and stood waiting for the sun to rise. Philip finished his prayers and joined him, while Alfred mixed sand and lime with water on a mortarboard. The sky grew brighter. The 3 men became tense. They were all watching the east wall of the Priory Close. At last, the red disk of the sun showed over the top of the wall. Tom shifted his position until he could see the edge of the sun through the small loop in the spike at the far end. Then, as Philip began to pray aloud in Latin, Tom held the second spike in front of him, so that it blocked his view of the sun. Steadily, he lowered it to the ground and pressed its pointed end into the damp earth, always keeping it precisely between his eye and the sun. He drew the mallet from his belt and carefully tapped the spike into the ground until its eye was level with his eyes. Now, if he had done the job properly and if his hands had not trembled, the sun should shine through the eyes of both spikes. He closed one eye and looked through the near spike at the far one. The sun still shone into his eye through the 2 loops. The 2 spikes lay on a perfect east-west line. That line would provide the orientation of the new cathedral. He had explained this to Philip, and he now stood aside and let the prior look through the loops himself to check. "Perfect," Philip said. Tom nodded. "It is." "Do you know what day it is?" Philip said. "Friday. It's also the day of the martyrdom of St. Adolphus. God sent us a sunrise so that we could orient the church on our patron's day. Isn't that a good sign?" Tom smiled. In his experience, good workmanship was more important than good omens in the building industry, but he was happy for Philip. "Yes, indeed," he said. "It's a very good sign." Chapter 6 Aliena was determined not to think about it. She sat all night on the cold stone floor of the chapel, with her back to the wall, staring into the darkness. At first she could think of nothing but the hellish scene she had been through, but gradually the pain eased a little, and she was able to concentrate her mind on the sounds of the storm, the rain falling on the roof of the chapel and the wind howling around the ramparts of the deserted castle. She had been naked at first. After the 2 men had... When they had finished, they had gone back to the table, leaving her lying on the floor, and Richard bleeding beside her. The men had begun eating and drinking as if they had forgotten about her, and then she and Richard had taken their chance and fled from the room. The storm had started by then, and they had run across the bridge in torrential rain and taken refuge in the chapel. But Richard had gone back to the keep almost immediately. He must have gone into the room where the men were, and snatched his cloak and Aliena's from the hook by the door, and run away again before William and his groom had time to react. But still he would not speak to her. He gave her her cloak, and wrapped his own around him. Then he sat on the floor a yard away from her, with his back to the same wall. She longed for someone who loved her to put his arms around her and comfort her, but Richard acted as if she had done something terribly shameful, and the worst of it was that she felt the same way. She felt as guilty as if she had committed a sin. She quite understood his not comforting her, his not wanting to touch her. She was glad it was cold. It helped her to feel withdrawn from the world, isolated, and it seemed to dull the pain. She did not sleep, but at some point in the night they both went into a kind of trance and sat as still as death for a long time. The sudden ending of the storm broke the spell. Aliena realized she could see the chapel windows, small grey patches in what had previously been unrelieved blankness. Richard stood up and went to the door. She watched him, feeling annoyed by the disturbance. She wanted to sit there against the wall until she froze to death or starved, for she could think of nothing more appealing than to slip peacefully into permanent unconsciousness. Then he opened the door, and the faint light of dawn illuminated his face. Aliena was shocked out of her trance. Richard was barely recognizable. His face was swollen out of shape and covered with dried blood and bruises. It made Aliena want to cry. Richard had always been full of empty bravado. As a small boy, he had dashed around the castle on an imaginary horse, pretending to stab people with an imaginary lance. Father's knights would always encourage him by pretending to be frightened of his wooden sword. In reality, Richard could be scared off by a hissing cat. But he had done his best last night, and he had been badly beaten for it. Now she would have to take care of him. Slowly she got to her feet. Her body ached, but the pain was not as bad as it had been last night. She considered what might be happening in the keep. William and his groom would have finished the jug of wine at some point during the night, and then they would have fallen asleep. They would probably wake at sunrise. By then she and Richard must be gone. She went to the other end of the chapel, to the altar. It was a simple wooden box, painted white, bare of ornament. She leaned against it, and then, with a sudden shove, pushed it over.
"What are you doing?"
said Richard, in a frightened voice. "This was Father's secret hiding place," she said. "He told me about it before he went away." On the floor where the altar had been was a cloth bundle. Aliena unwrapped it to reveal a full-size sword, complete with scabbard and belt, and a vicious-looking dagger a foot long. Richard came over to look. He had little skill with a sword. He had been taking lessons for a year, but he was still clumsy. However, Aliena certainly could not wield it, so she handed it to him. He buckled the belt around his waist. Aliena looked at the dagger. She had never carried a weapon. All her life, she had had someone to protect her. Realizing that she needed the deadly knife for her own protection, she felt utterly abandoned. She was not sure she could ever use it. "I've stuck a wooden lance into a wild pig," she thought. "Why couldn't I stick this into a man? Someone like William Hamley." She recoiled from the thought. The dagger had a leather sheath with a loop for attaching it to a belt. The loop was big enough to go around Aliena's slim wrist like a bracelet. She eased it over her left hand and pushed the knife up her sleeve. It was long. It reached past her elbow. Even if she could not stab someone, perhaps she could use it to frighten people. Richard said, "Let's get away, quickly." Aliena nodded, but as she was making for the door, she stopped. The day was rapidly becoming lighter, and she could see on the chapel floor two shadowy objects she had not noticed before. Looking closely, she saw that they were saddles, one of average size and one truly enormous. She visualized William and his groom arriving here last night, flushed with their triumph at Winchester and wearied by their journey, carelessly lifting the saddles from their horses and dumping them in here before hurrying to the keep. They would not imagine that anyone would dare steal from them. But desperate people find courage. Aliena went to the door and looked out. The light was clear but weak, and there were no colours. The wind had dropped, and the sky was cloudless. Several wooden shingles had fallen from the roof of the chapel in the night. The compound was empty except for the two horses grazing the wet grass. They both looked up at Aliena, then put their heads down again. One of them was a huge war horse. That explained the oversized saddle. The other was a dappled stallion, not good-looking, but compact and solid. Aliena stared at them, then at the saddles, then back at the horses.
"What are we waiting for?"
Richard said anxiously. Aliena made up her mind. "Let's take their horses," she said decisively. Richard looked scared.
"They'll kill us.
They won't be able to catch us. If we don't take their horses, they might come after us and kill us.
What if they catch us before we get away?
We'll just have to be quick." She was not as confident as she pretended, but she had to encourage Richard. "Let's saddle the courser first. He looks more friendly. Bring the regular saddle." She hurried across the compound. Both horses were tied by long ropes to the stumps of burned buildings. Aliena picked up the courser's rope and pulled gently. This would be the groom's horse, of course. Aliena would have preferred something smaller and more timid, but she thought she could handle this one. Richard would have to take the war horse. The courser looked suspiciously at Aliena and laid back its ears. She was desperately impatient, but she forced herself to talk softly and pull gently on the rope, and the horse calmed down. She held its head and stroked its nose. Then Richard slipped the bridle on and pushed the bit into its mouth. Aliena was relieved. Richard lifted the smaller of the two saddles onto its back and secured it with rapid, sure movements. Both of them had been used to horses from an early age. There were bags attached to both sides of the groom's saddle. Aliena hoped they might contain something useful, a flint, some food, or a little horse grain, but there was no time to investigate now. She glanced nervously across the compound toward the bridge that led to the keep. There was nobody there. The war horse had watched the courser being saddled and knew what was coming, but it was not keen to cooperate with total strangers. It snorted and resisted the pull of the rope.
"Hush!"
Aliena said. She held the rope tightly, pulling steadily, and the horse came to her reluctantly. But it was very strong, and if it made a determined effort to resist, there would be trouble. Aliena wondered whether the courser could carry her and Richard, but then William would be able to come after them on the war horse. When she had the horse close, she looped the rope around the stump so that it could not move away. But when Richard tried to put the bridle on, the horse tossed its head and evaded it.
"Try putting the saddle on first," Aliena said.
She talked to the beast and patted its mighty neck, while Richard hefted the massive saddle and tied it on. The horse began to look somewhat defeated.
"Now you be good,"
Aliena said in a firm voice, but the horse was not fooled. It sensed the panic just beneath the surface. Richard approached with the bridle, and the horse snorted and tried to move away.
"I've got something for you,"
Aliena said, and reached into the empty pocket of her cloak. The horse was deceived. She brought out a handful of nothing, but the horse dipped his head and nuzzled her hand, looking for food. She felt the rough skin of its tongue on her palm. While its head was down and its mouth was open, Richard slipped the bridle on. Aliena shot another fearful glance toward the keep. All was quiet.
"Get on," she said to Richard.
He put one foot in a high stirrup, not without difficulty, and swung himself up onto the huge horse. Aliena untied the rope from the stump. The horse neighed loudly. Aliena's heart raced. That sound might have carried to the keep. A man such as William would know the voice of his own horse, especially a horse as expensive as this one. He might have woken up. She hurried to untie the other horse. Her cold fingers fumbled with the knot. The thought of William waking up had made her lose her nerve. He would open his eyes, sit up, look around him, remember where he was, and wonder why his horse had called. He was sure to come. She felt she could not face him again. The shameful, brutal, agonizing thing he had done to her came back in all its horror. Richard said urgently,
"Come on, Allie!"
His horse was jittery and impatient now. He was working hard to make it stay still. He needed to gallop it for a mile or two to tire it. Then it would be more tractable. It neighed again and started moving sideways. At last Aliena got the knot undone. She was tempted to drop the rope, but then she would have had no way to tie the horse up again, so she coiled it hastily and messily and tied it to a saddle strap. She needed to adjust the stirrups. They were the right length for William's groom, who was several inches taller than she was, so they would be too low for her to reach when she was in the saddle. But she could picture William coming down the stairs, crossing the hall, coming out into the air.
"I can't hold this horse much longer," Richard said in a strained voice.
Aliena was as jittery as the warhorse. She swung herself up on the stallion. Sitting on the saddle hurt her inside, and it was all she could do to stay on. Richard moved his horse toward the gate, and Aliena's horse followed without any prompting from her. The stirrups were out of reach, as she had expected, and she had to grip with her knees. As they moved off, she heard a shout from somewhere behind her, and she groaned aloud,
"Oh, no!"
She saw Richard kick his horse. The huge beast lumbered into a trot. Her own followed suit. She was grateful that it always did what the warhorse did, for she was in no state to control it herself. Richard kicked the warhorse again, and it picked up speed as they passed under the arch of the gatehouse. Aliena heard another shout, much closer. She looked over her shoulder to see William and his groom pounding across the compound after her. Richard's horse was nervous, and as soon as it saw open fields in front of it, it put its head down and broke into a gallop. They thundered across the wooden drawbridge. Aliena felt something tug at her thigh, and saw out of the corner of her eye a man's hand reaching for her saddle straps, but an instant later it was gone, and she knew they had escaped. Relief flooded her, but then she felt the pain again. As the horse galloped across the field, she felt stabbed inside, as she had when the foul William had penetrated her, and there was a warm trickle on her thigh. She gave the horse its head and shut her eyes tight against the pain. But the horror of the night before came back to her, and she saw it all behind her closed eyelids. As they raced across the field, she chanted in time with the horse's hoofbeats, "I can't remember, I can't remember, I can't, I can't, I can't." Her horse angled to the right, and she sensed that it was going up a slight slope. She opened her eyes and saw that Richard had turned off the mud path, and was taking a long route to the woods. She thought he probably wanted to make sure the warhorse was good and tired before letting it slow down. Both beasts would be easier to manage after being ridden hard. Soon she felt her own mount starting to flag. She sat back in the saddle. The horse slowed to a canter, then a trot, then a walk. Richard's horse still had energy to burn, and it pulled away. Aliena looked back across the fields. The castle was a mile away, and she was not sure whether or not she could see two figures standing on the drawbridge looking toward her. They would have to walk a long way to find replacement horses, she thought. She felt safe for a while. Her hands and feet tingled as they warmed up. Heat rose from the horse as from a fire, and wrapped her in a hot air cocoon. Richard let his horse slow down at last, and turned back toward her, his horse walking and blowing hard. They turned into the trees. They both knew these woods well, for they had lived here most of their lives.
"Where are we going?" asked Richard.
Aliena frowned. Where were they going? What were they going to do? They had no food, nothing to drink, and no money. She had no clothes except for the cloak she was wearing, no tunic, no undershirt, no hat, no shoes. She intended to take care of her brother, but how? She could see now that for the past 3 months she had been living in a dream. She had known in the back of her mind that the old life was over, but she had refused to face it. William Hamley had woken her up. She had no doubt that his story was true and King Stephen had made Percy Hamley the Earl of Shiring. But perhaps there was more to it. Perhaps the king had made some provision for her and Richard. If not, he should have, and they could certainly petition him. Either way, they had to go to Winchester. There they could at least find out what had happened to their father. She suddenly thought, "Oh, father, where did it all go wrong?" Ever since her mother had died, her father had taken special care of her. She knew he paid more attention to her than other fathers did to their daughters. He felt bad that he had not married again, to give her a new mother, and he had explained that he was happier with the memory of his wife than he ever could be with a substitute. Aliena had never wanted another mother anyway. Her father had looked after her, and she had looked after Richard, and that way no harm could ever come to any of them. Those days were gone forever.
"Where are we going?"
Richard said again.
"To Winchester," she said. "We'll go and see the king."
Richard was enthusiastic. "Yes, and when we report what William and his groom did last night, the king will surely—" In a flash, Aliena was possessed by uncontrollable rage.
"Shut your mouth!" she screamed.
The horses started nervously. She pulled viciously on her reins.
"Don't ever say that!"
She was choking with fury and could hardly spit out the words.
"We're not going to tell anyone what they did. Not anyone. Never, never, never!"
The groom's saddlebags contained a large lump of hard cheese, some dregs of wine in a leather bottle, a flint and some kindling, and a pound or two of mixed grains, which Aliena imagined were for the horses. She and Richard ate the cheese and drank the wine at noon, while the horses grazed the sparse grass and evergreen shrubs and drank from a clear stream. She had stopped bleeding, and the lower half of her torso felt numb. They had seen some other travellers, but Aliena had told Richard to speak to no one. To the casual observer they appeared a formidable couple, Richard in particular, on his huge horse with his sword. But a few moments' conversation would reveal them to be a pair of kids with no one to take care of them, and then they might be vulnerable. So they steered clear of other people. As the day began to fade, they looked for somewhere to spend the night. They found a clearing near a stream 100 yards or so from the road. Aliena gave the horses some grain while Richard made a fire. If they had had a cooking pot, they could have made porridge with the horse grain. As it was, they would just have to chew the grains raw, unless they could find some sweet chestnuts and roast them. While she was pondering that, and Richard was out of sight gathering firewood, she was scared by a deep voice close to her.
"And who would you be, my lass?"
she screamed. The horse backed away, frightened. Aliena turned and saw a dirty, bearded man all dressed in brown leather. He took a step toward her.
"Keep away from me!" she shrieked.
"No need to be afraid," he said.
Out of the corner of her eye, she saw Richard step into the clearing behind the stranger, his arms full of wood. He stood looking at the two of them.
"Draw your sword,"
thought Aliena. But he looked too scared and uncertain to do anything. She stepped back, trying to get the horse between herself and the stranger.
"We've got no money," she said. "We've got nothing."
"I'm the king's verderer," he said.
Aliena almost collapsed with relief. A verderer was a royal servant paid to enforce the forest laws.
"Why didn't you say so, you foolish man?"
she said, angry at having been scared.
"I took you for an outlaw."
He looked startled and rather offended, as if she had said something impolite. But all he said was,
"You'll be a high-born lady, then."
"I am the daughter of the Earl of Shiring."
"And the boy will be his son," said the verderer, although he had not seemed to see Richard.
Richard now stepped forward and dropped his firewood.
"That's right," he said. "What's your name?"
"Brian. Are you planning to spend the night here?"
"Yes."
"All alone?"
"Yes."
Aliena knew he was wondering why they had no escort, but she was not going to tell him.
"And you've no money, you say?"
Aliena frowned at him.
"Do you doubt me?"
"Oh, no. I can tell your nobility by your manners."
Was there a hint of irony in his voice? "If you're alone and penniless, perhaps you'd prefer to spend the night at my house. It's not far." Aliena had no intention of putting herself at the mercy of this rough character. She was about to refuse when he spoke again.
"My wife would be glad to give you supper, and I've a warm outhouse where you could sleep if you prefer to sleep alone."
The wife made a difference. Accepting the hospitality of a respectable family should be safe enough. Still, Aliena hesitated. Then she thought of a fireplace, a bowl of hot pottage, a cup of wine, and a bed of straw with a roof over it.
"We'd be grateful," she said. "We've nothing to give you. I told you the truth about having no money, but we'll come back and reward you one day."
"Good enough," said the verderer.
He went over to the fire and kicked it out. Aliena and Richard mounted. They had not yet unsaddled the horses. The verderer came over and said, "Give me the reins." Not sure what he wanted to do, Aliena gave him the reins, and Richard did likewise. The man set off through the forest, leading the horses. Aliena would have preferred to hold the reins herself, but she decided to let him have his way. It was farther than he had indicated. They had travelled 3 or 4 miles, and it was dark by the time they reached a small wood house with a thatched roof on the edge of a field. But there was light shining through the shutters and a smell of cooking, and Aliena dismounted gratefully. The verderer's wife heard the horses and came to the door. The man said to her, "A young lord and lady alone in the forest. Give them something to drink." He turned to Aliena. "In you go. I'll see to the horses." Aliena did not like his peremptory tone. She would have preferred it if she were the one giving instructions, but she had no wish to unsaddle her own horse, so she went inside. Richard followed. The house was smoky and smelly, but warm. There was a cow tethered in one corner. Aliena was glad the man had mentioned an outhouse. She had never slept with cattle. A pot bubbled on the fire. They sat on a bench, and the wife gave them each a bowl of soup from the pot. It tasted gamey. When she saw Richard's face in the light, she was shocked. "What happened to you?" she said. Richard opened his mouth to reply, but Aliena forestalled him. "We've had a series of misfortunes," she said. "We're on our way to see the king." "I see," said the wife. She was a small, brown-skinned woman with a guarded look. She did not persist in her questioning. Aliena ate her soup quickly and wanted more. She held out her bowl. The woman looked away. Aliena was puzzled. Did she not know what Aliena wanted, or did she not have any more? Aliena was about to speak to her sharply when the verderer came in. "I'll show you the barn where you can sleep," he said. He took a lamp from a hook by the door. "Come with me." Aliena and Richard stood up. Aliena said to the wife, "There is one thing more I need. Can you give me an old dress? I've got nothing on under this cloak." The woman looked annoyed for some reason. "I'll see what I can find," she muttered. Aliena went to the door. The verderer was giving her a strange look, staring at her cloak as if he might be able to see through it if he looked hard enough. "Lead the way," she said sharply. He turned and went through the door. He led them around to the back of the house and through a vegetable patch. The shifting light of the lamp revealed a small wooden building, more of a shed than a barn. He opened the door. It banged against a water butt that collected the rain from the roof. "Take a look," he said. "See if it suits you." Richard went in first. "Bring the light, Ali," he said. Aliena turned to take the lamp from the verderer. As she did so, he gave her a powerful shove. She fell sideways through the doorway and into the barn, cannoning off her brother. They both ended up in a tangle on the floor. It went dark and the door banged shut. There was a peculiar noise outside, as of something heavy being moved in front of the door. Aliena could not believe this was happening. "What's going on, Ali?" Richard cried. She sat up. Was the man really a verderer, or was he an outlaw? He could not be an outlaw. His house was too substantial. But if he really was a verderer, why had he locked them up? Had they broken a law? Did he guess that the horses were not theirs? Or did he have some dishonest motive?
"Ali, why did he do that?" Richard said.
"I don't know," she said wearily.
She had no energy left to be upset or angry. She got up and pushed at the door. It would not move. She guessed that the verderer had put the water butt up against it. In the dark, she felt the walls of the barn. She could reach the lower slopes of the roof, too. The building was made of close-set timbers. It had been carefully constructed. It was the verderer's jail where he kept offenders before taking them to the sheriff.
"We can't get out," she said.
She sat down. The floor was dry and covered with straw.
"We're stuck here until he lets us out," she said resignedly.
Richard sat beside her. After a while they lay down back to back. Aliena felt she was too battered and frightened and tense to go to sleep, but she was also exhausted, and within a few moments she fell into a healing slumber. She woke up when the door opened and daylight fell on her face. She sat up immediately, feeling frightened, not knowing where she was or why she was sleeping on the hard ground. Then she remembered and was still more frightened. What was the verderer going to do to them? However,
It was not the verderer who came in, but his small brown wife, and although her face was as set and closed as it had been last night, she was carrying a hunk of bread and two cups. Richard sat up, too. They both eyed the woman warily. She said nothing, but handed them each a cup, then broke the bread in two and gave half to each of them. Elena suddenly realized she was starving. She dipped her bread in her beer and began to eat. The woman stood in the doorway watching them while they finished off the bread and beer. Then she handed Elena what looked like a length of worn yellowing linen folded up. Elena unfolded it. It was an old dress. The woman said, "Put that on and get out of here." Elena was mystified by the combination of kindness and hard words, but she did not hesitate to take the dress. She turned her back, dropped her cloak, pulled the dress over her head quickly and put the cloak back on. She felt better. The woman handed her a pair of worn wooden clogs, too big. Elena said, "I can't ride with clogs on." The woman laughed harshly. "You won't be riding." "Why not? He's taken your horses." Elena's heart sank. It was too unfair that they should suffer more bad luck.
"Where's he taken them?"
"He doesn't tell me these things, but I'd guess he's gone to Shiring. He'll sell the beasts, then find out who you are, and whether there's anything more to be made out of you than the price of your horse flesh."
"So why are you letting us go?"
The woman looked Elena up and down.
"Because I didn't like the way he looked at you when you told him you were naked under your cloak.
You may not understand that now, but you will when you're a wife." Elena understood it already, but she did not say so. Richard said, "Won't he kill you when he finds you've let us go?" She gave a cynical smile. "He doesn't scare me as much as he scares others. Now be off." They went out. Elena understood that this woman had learned how to live with a brutal and heartless man, and had even managed to preserve a minimum of decency and compassion.
"Thank you for the dress," she said awkwardly.
The woman did not want her thanks. She pointed down the path and said, "Winchester is that way." They walked away and did not look back. Elena had never worn clogs. People of her class always had leather boots or sandals, and she found them clumsy and uncomfortable. However, they were better than nothing when the ground was cold. When they were out of sight of the verderer's house, Richard said,
"Ali, why are these things happening to us?"
The question demoralized Elena. Everyone was cruel to them. People were allowed to beat them and rob them as if they were horses or dogs. There was nobody to protect them. "We've been too trusting," she thought. They had lived for 3 months in the castle without ever barring the doors. She resolved to trust nobody in the future. Never again would she let someone else take the reins of her horse, even if she had to be rude to prevent it. Never again would she let someone get behind her the way the verderer had last night, when he pushed her into the shed. She would never accept the hospitality of a stranger, never leave her door unlocked at night, never take kindness at face value.
"Let's walk faster," she said to Richard. "Perhaps we can reach Winchester by nightfall."
They followed the path to the clearing where they had met the verderer. The remains of their fire were still there. From there, they easily found the road to Winchester. They had been to Winchester before many times, and they knew the way. Once they were on the road, they could move faster. Frost had hardened the mud since the storm 2 nights ago. Richard's face was returning to normal. He had washed it yesterday in a cold brook in the woods, and most of the dried blood had gone. There was an ugly scab where his right earlobe had been. His lips were still swollen, but the puffiness had gone from the rest of his face. However, he was still badly bruised, and the angry color of the bruises gave him a rather frightening appearance. Still, that would do no harm. Elena missed the heat of the horse beneath her. Her hands and feet were painfully cold, even though her body was warm from the exertion of walking. The weather remained cold all morning. Then at midday the temperature rose a little. By then she was hungry. She remembered that only yesterday she had felt as if she did not care whether she ever got warm or ate food again. But she did not want to think about that. Whenever they heard horses or saw people in the distance, they darted into the woods and hid until the other travelers had passed by. They hurried through villages, speaking to no one. Richard wanted to beg for food, but Elena would not let him. By the middle of the afternoon they were within a few miles of their destination, and no one had bothered them. Aliena was thinking that it was not so difficult to avoid trouble after all. Then, on a particularly desolate stretch of the road, a man suddenly stepped out of the bushes and stood in front of them. They had no time to hide. "Keep walking," Aliena said to Richard, but the man moved to block their way, and they had to stop. Aliena looked behind, thinking of running that way, but another fellow had materialized out of the forest and was standing 10 or 15 yards away, blocking their escape.
"What have we here?"
said the man in front in a loud voice. He was a fat, red-faced man with a big, swollen belly and a filthy, matted beard, and he carried a heavy club. He was almost certainly an outlaw. Aliena could tell from his face that he was the kind of man who would commit violence readily, and her heart filled with dread.
"Leave us alone," she said in a pleading tone. "We've got nothing for you to steal."
"I'm not so sure," said the man.
He took a step toward Richard. "This looks like a fine sword, worth several shillings."
"It's mine,"
Richard protested, but he just sounded like a scared child. "It's no use," Aliena thought. "We're powerless. I'm a woman, and he's a boy, and people can do anything they like with us." With a surprisingly agile movement, the fat man suddenly raised his club and struck at Richard. Richard tried to dodge. The blow was aimed at his head, but it hit his shoulder. The fat man was strong, and the blow knocked Richard down. Suddenly Aliena lost her temper. She had been treated unjustly, vilely abused, and robbed, and she was cold and hungry and hardly in control of herself. Her little brother had been beaten half to death less than 2 days ago, and now the sight of someone clubbing him maddened her. She lost all sense of reason or caution. Without even thinking, she pulled the dagger from her sleeve, flew at the fat outlaw, and jabbed the knife at his great belly, screaming, "Leave him alone, you dog!" She took him completely by surprise. His cloak had come open when he hit Richard, and his hands were still occupied with the club. He was completely off guard. No doubt he had thought himself safe from attack by a young girl who appeared unarmed. The point of the knife went through the wool of his tunic and the linen of his undershirt, and was stopped by the taut skin of his belly. Aliena experienced a flash of revulsion, a moment of sheer horror at the thought of breaking human skin and penetrating the flesh of a real person. But fear stiffened her resolve, and she shoved the knife through his skin and into the soft organs of his abdomen, and then she became terrified that she might not kill him, that he might stay alive to take his revenge, and so she kept on pushing until the long knife was inside him up to the hilt, and would not go in any farther. Suddenly the fearsome, arrogant, cruel man was a frightened, wounded animal. He cried out in pain, dropped his club, and stared down at the knife sticking into him. Aliena understood in a flash that he knew it was a mortal wound. She snatched her hand away in horror. The outlaw staggered back. Aliena remembered that there was another thief behind her, and panic seized her. He would surely take a terrible revenge for the death of his accomplice. She grabbed the hilt of the knife again and jerked. The wounded man had turned slightly away from her, and she had to pull the knife sideways. She felt it slice through his soft insides as it came out of his fat belly. Blood spurted on her hand, and the man screamed like an animal and fell to the ground. She spun round, knife in bloody hand, and faced the other man. As she did so, Richard struggled to his feet and drew his sword. The second thief looked from one of them to the other, then at his dying friend, and without further ado, he turned and ran into the woods. Aliena watched, incredulous. They had scared him off. It was hard to take in. She looked at the man on the ground. He lay flat on his back with his guts falling out of the great tear in his belly. His eyes were wide open, and his face was twisted with pain and fear. Aliena felt no relief, no pride in having defended herself and her brother from ruthless men. She was too disgusted and repelled by the hideous sight. Richard felt no such qualms.
"You stabbed him, Ali,"
he said in a voice between excitement and hysteria.
"You did for them."
Aliena looked at him. He had to be taught a lesson.
"Kill this one,"
she said. Richard stared at her.
"What?"
"Kill him," she repeated. Put him out of his misery. Finish him off.
Why me?
She deliberately made her voice harsh. Because you act like a boy, and I need a man. Because you've never done anything with a sword except play at war, and you have to start somewhere. What's the matter with you? What are you afraid of? He's dying anyway. He can't hurt you. Use your sword. Get some practice. Kill him.
Richard held his sword in both hands and looked uncertain.
How?
The man screamed again.
Elena yelled at Richard, I don't know how. Cut off his head or stab him in the heart. Anything, just shut him up.
Richard looked cornered. He lifted his sword and lowered it again.
Elena said, If you don't do this, I'll leave you alone, I swear by all the saints. I'll get up one night and go away, and when you wake up in the morning, I won't be there, and you'll be all on your own. Now kill him.
Richard raised his sword again. Then, incredibly, the dying man stopped screaming and tried to get up. He rolled to one side and raised himself on one elbow. Richard gave a shout that was half a yell of fear and half a battle cry, and brought his sword down hard on the man's exposed neck. The weapon was heavy and the blade was sharp, and the blow sliced more than halfway through the fat neck. Blood spurted like a fountain and the head leaned grotesquely to one side. The body slumped to the earth. Elena and Richard stared at it. Steam rose from the hot blood in the winter air. They were both stunned by what they had done. Suddenly, Elena wanted to get away from there. She started to run. Richard followed. She stopped when she could run no more, and that was when she realized she was sobbing. She walked on slowly, no longer caring if Richard saw her in tears. He seemed unaffected anyway. Gradually, she calmed down. The wooden clogs were hurting her. She stopped and took them off. She walked on in her bare feet, carrying the clogs. Soon they would reach Winchester. After a while, Richard said,
We're fools.
Why?
That man. We just left him there. We should have taken his boots.
Elena stopped and stared, horrified, at her brother. He looked back at her and gave a little laugh.
There's nothing wrong with that, is there?
He said. 2. Elena began to feel hopeful again as she walked through the West Gate to Winchester High Street at nightfall. In the forest, she had felt that she might be murdered and no one would ever know what had happened. But now she was back in civilization. Of course, the city was full of thieves and cutthroats, but they could not commit their crimes in broad daylight with impunity. In the city there were laws, and lawbreakers were banished, mutilated or hanged. She remembered going down this street with her father only a year or so ago. They had been on horseback, naturally, he on a highly strung chestnut courser and she on a beautiful grey palfrey. People made way for them as they rode through the broad streets. They owned a house in the south of the city, and when they arrived, they were welcomed by 8 or 10 servants. The house had been cleaned. There was fresh straw on the floor, and all the fires were lit. During their stay, Elena had worn beautiful clothes every day, fine linen, silk and soft wool, all dyed gorgeous colors, boots and belts of calf leather, and jeweled brooches and bracelets. It had been her job to make sure there was always a welcome for anyone who came to see the Earl. Meat and wine for the wealthy, bread and ale for the poorer sort, a smile and a place by the fire for either. Her father was punctilious about hospitality, but he was not good at doing it personally. People found him cool, remote, even high-handed. Elena supplied the lack. Everyone respected her father, and the very highest had called on him, the bishop, the prior, the sheriff, the royal chancellor, and the barons at the court. She wondered how many of those people would recognize her now, walking barefoot through the mud and filth of that same high street. The thought did not dampen her optimism. The important thing was that she no longer felt like a victim. She was back in a world where there were rules and laws, and she had a chance to regain control of her life. They walked past their house. It was empty and locked up. The Hamleys had not yet taken it over. For a moment, Elena was tempted to try to get in. It's my house, she thought. But it was not, of course, and the idea of spending the night there reminded her of the way she had lived in the castle, closing her eyes to reality. She walked on determinedly.
The other good thing about being in the city was that there was a monastery here. The monks would always provide a bed for anyone who begged it. She and Richard would sleep under a roof tonight, safe and dry. She found the cathedral and went into the priory courtyard. Two monks stood at a trestle table, doling out horse bread and beer to 100 or more people. It had not occurred to Aliena that there would be so many others begging the monk's hospitality. She and Richard joined the queue. It was amazing, she thought, how people who would normally jostle and shove one another to get at free food could be made to stand quietly in an orderly line just because a monk told them to. They got their supper and took it into the guest house. This was a big wooden building like a barn, bare of furniture, dimly lit by rushlights, smelling strongly of many people crowded closely together. They sat on the ground to eat. The floor was covered with rushes that were none too fresh. Aliena wondered whether she should tell the monks who she was. The prior might remember her. In such a large priory, there would naturally be a superior guest house for highborn visitors. But she found herself reluctant to do that. Perhaps it was that she was afraid of being spurned. But she also felt she would be putting herself in someone else's power again. And although she had nothing to fear from a prior, nevertheless she felt more comfortable remaining anonymous and unnoticed. The other guests were mostly pilgrims with a sprinkling of traveling craftsmen, identifiable by the tools they carried, and some hawkers, men who went from village to village selling things that peasants could not make for themselves, pins and knives and cooking pots and spices. Some of them had their wives and children with them. The children were noisy and excited, rushing around and fighting and falling over. Every now and again one would cannon into an adult, get a smack on the head and burst into tears. Some of them were not perfectly house-trained, and Aliena saw several children urinating into the rushes on the floor. Such things were probably of no consequence in a house where the livestock slept in the same room as the people, but in a crowded hall it was rather disgusting, Aliena thought. They all had to sleep on those rushes later. She began to get the feeling that people were looking at her as if they knew she had been deflowered. It was ridiculous, of course, but the feeling would not go away. She kept checking to see whether she was bleeding. She was not. But every time she turned around, she caught someone giving her a hard, penetrating stare. As soon as she met their eyes, they would look away, but a little while later she would catch someone else doing it. She kept telling herself that this was foolish. They weren't staring at her. They were just looking curiously around a crowded room. There was nothing to look at anyway. She was no different from them in appearance. She was as dirty, badly dressed, and tired as they were. But the feeling persisted, and against her will she got angry. There was one man who kept catching her eye, a middle-aged pilgrim with a large family. Eventually she lost her temper and yelled at him, "What are you looking at? Stop staring at me!" He seemed embarrassed and averted his eyes without replying. Richard said quietly, "Why did you do that, Ali?" She told him to shut up, and he did. The monks came around and took away the lights soon after supper. They liked people to go to sleep early. It kept them out of the alehouses and brothels of the city at night, and in the morning it made it easier for the monks to get the visitors off the premises early. Several of the single men left the hall when the lights went out, headed, no doubt, for the fleshpots, but most people curled up in their cloaks on the floor. It was many years since Aliena had slept in a hall like this. As a child, she had always envied the people downstairs, lying side by side in front of the dying fire, in a room full of smoke and the smell of dinner, with the dogs to guard them. There had been a sense of togetherness in the hall, which was absent from the spacious empty chambers of the lord's family. In those days she had sometimes left her own bed and tiptoed down the stairs to sleep alongside one of her favorite servants, Madge Laundry or Old Joan. Drifting off to sleep with the smell of her childhood in her nostrils, she dreamed about her mother. Normally she had trouble remembering what her mother had looked like, but now, to her surprise, she could see Mama's face clearly, in every detail. The small features, the timid smile, the slight frame, the look of anxiety in the eyes. She saw her mother's walk, leaning slightly to one side as if she were always trying to get close to the wall, with the opposite arm extended a little for balance. She could hear her mother's laugh, that unexpectedly rich contralto, always ready to break into song or laughter, but usually afraid to do so. She knew in the dream something that had never been clear to her awake, that her father had so frightened her mother and suppressed her sense of the joy of life, that she had shriveled up and died like a flower in a drought. All this came into Aliena's mind like something very familiar, something she had always known. However, what was shocking was that Aliena was pregnant. Mother seemed pleased. They sat together in a bedroom, and Aliena's belly was so distended that she had to sit with her legs slightly apart, and her hands crossed over her bump in the age-old pose of the mother-to-be. Then William Hamley burst into the room, carrying in his hand the dagger with the long blade, and Aliena knew he was going to stab her belly the way she had stabbed the fat outlaw in the forest, and she screamed so loud she woke up, sitting upright. And then she realized that William was not here, and she had not even screamed. The noise had only been in her head. After that she lay awake wondering if she really was pregnant. The thought had not occurred to her before, and now it terrified her. How disgusting it would be to have William Hamley's baby. It might not be his. It might be the groom's. She might never know. How could she love the baby? Every time she looked at it, it would remind her of that dreadful night. She would have the baby in secret, she vowed, and leave it out in the cold to die as soon as it was born, the way the peasants did when they had too many children. With that resolve, she drifted off to sleep again. It was barely light when the monks brought breakfast. The noise woke Aliena. Most of the other guests were awake already because they had gone to sleep so early, but Aliena had slept on. She had been very tired. Breakfast was hot gruel with salt. Aliena and Richard ate hungrily and wished there were bread to go with it. Aliena thought over what she would say to King Stephen. She felt sure that he had simply forgotten that the Earl of Shiring had two children. As soon as they appeared and reminded him, he would willingly make provision for them, she thought. However, in case he needed persuading, she ought to have a few words ready. She would not insist that her father was innocent, she decided, for that would imply that the king's judgment had been at fault and he would be offended. Nor would she protest about Percy Hamley being made earl. Men of affairs hated to have past decisions disputed. "For better or worse, that's been settled," her father would say. No, she would simply point out that she and her brother were innocent, and ask the king to give them a knight's estate so that they could support themselves modestly, and Richard could prepare to become one of the king's fighting men in a few years' time. A small estate would enable her to take care of her father when the king pleased to release him from jail. He was no longer a threat. He had no title, no followers, and no money. She would remind the king that her father had faithfully served the old king, Henry, who had been Stephen's uncle. She would not be forceful, just humbly firm, clear, and simple. After breakfast, she asked a monk where she could wash her face. He looked startled. Evidently it was an unusual request. However, monks were in favor of cleanliness, and he showed her an open conduit where clean, cold water ran into the priory grounds, and warned her not to wash indecently, as he put it, in case one of the brothers should accidentally see her and thereby soil his soul. Monks did a lot of good, but their attitudes could be irritating. When she and Richard had washed the dirt of the road off their faces, they left the priory and walked uphill along the high street to the castle, which stood to one side of the west gate. By coming early, Aliena hoped to befriend or charm whoever was in charge of admitting petitioners, and ensure that she was not forgotten in the crowd of important people who would arrive later. However, the atmosphere within the castle walls was even quieter than she had hoped. Had King Stephen been here so long that few people needed to see him? She was not sure when he might have come. The king was normally at Winchester throughout Lent, she thought, but she was not sure when Lent had begun, for she had lost track of dates, living in the castle with Richard and Matthew and no priest. There was a burly guard with a grey beard standing at the foot of the keep steps. Aliena made to walk past him, as she had when she came here with her father, but the guard lowered his spear across her path. She looked at him imperiously and said, "Yes?"
"And where do you think you're going, my girl?" said the guard.
Aliena saw with a sinking feeling that he